The time of 1 p.m. having arrived, I'm going to call the first meeting of the 2021 session of the Taxes Committee to order. And I want to welcome all members. Thank you for being a member. And you know, one reason why I'm honored to chair this committee is because the Taxes Committee is one of those committees that has the tools to really make a really positive difference in every Minnesotan's life around this state. And also the opportunity now to work with the addition of two more members, 20 other colleagues and members who have the best interest of the state and their districts at heart. So it's an honor to be able to serve as chair again. And I'm looking forward to some really good things here out of the taxes committee. So today, we're not going to take, we do have a quorum. Normally, what we would do for roll call is call each name out and you would say your name and then present. But we're not going to do that today because we're going to do introductions. And that will serve as the roll call, if you will, for today. So when you're asked to do the introduction, if you would state your district number, where you represent, how many terms you've been in, and so forth, and that would be great. And so today we're going to go over the introductions, over some rules, and then I'll look at an overview of the tax system. We're going to kind of start things out. And if you want to, as I was mentioning earlier, I don't know if everyone was on, but during with these, and by the way, we are meeting in accordance with hearing remote rules 10.01. I need to mention that. But having said that, we're going to be slowing things up so that we make sure before we move on to something that, you know, if someone wants to speak, we're not going to miss you. But one of the ways in which you can do that, I have been told now, is if you go to the bottom of your Zoom, you can go to where it says reactions and then click on that, and then that will allow you to raise your hand. If you can't do that, text Ms. Griska, who that number was sent out earlier, but we'll make sure that people are heard. So before we go to introductions, I got, you know, back on October 12th of 1990, and I've got my 1990 date book to show that, I was a young mayor in Dilworth, and I attended the Minnesota Mayors Conference that was being held that October of 1990 in Fergus Falls at the Holiday Inn. And when I got there, I sat at a table, and at that table was another young mayor from Preston, Minnesota, by the name of Greg Davids. And we had an excellent conversation. And I remember that because probably 3 or 4 months later, there was a special election in early 1991. And I remember seeing Greg Davids being elected to the Minnesota House of Representatives. And I bring that up because that started 30 years and now 3 months ago, what I would consider a good friendship and a very good, respectful, strong working relationship with Chair Davids. And we've been on this tax committee together for 20 years, plus or take a few years I wasn't on there. But in the last 5 years, we have worked with each other, either in the role as chairperson or as the lead for your political party on that. And I just send that, I kind of mention that because it's kind of a gentle reminder that for members, if you really want to earn respect and get results for your district and the state, what I have learned in 20 years, it is vitally important to really establish a strong, respectful, working atmosphere with other members of this body, and especially the opposite party. I think that is really crucial, and I have really valued the time that I have spent working with Chair Davids. And that's just one example of many that I know all of you legislators have. But this is dating 30 years and 3 months now since we first met as young mayors. And, you know, when I have served on the committee, all of the chairs that I have served with have also followed that tradition of mutual respect and understanding of not only the member, but the district that they represent. Now, starting with Chair Abrams and Chair Krenke and Chair Lincheski and most recently Chair Davids, they have all followed that tradition, and I'm hoping I can, that's going to be a major goal for us as we move forward with this committee. And also, one thing that's kind of an unwritten rule, the committee, it's at least been since Chair Lincheski and Chair Davids, is that the very first bill heard in tax committee in any session has always been a bill from the opposite party of the chair. So that is the plan again this year. However, Chair Davids, the problem is I haven't found any good Republican bills yet. Now that's just just a joke. But that is what we're going to be doing is I'll be working with Chair Davids, and we will, that first bill this year will be a Republican bill. So with that, what I'd like to do here is to go to introductions, and I'm going to start with Lead Davids. And the reason is because another unwritten rule in tax committee is that when your name is invoked in any discussion, you get the opportunity to respond. And so what I'm asking folks to do is I'm going to go to Chair Davids, I'm going to go to Vice Chair Les Lagarde, and then alphabetical order after that. And other than the lead, who I'm going to give a little more discretion to, basically, if you could just introduce yourself, what district you serve, and how long you have served there. So with that, I'm going to call on Chair Davids, if you would introduce yourself.
Well, Chair Marquardt, since my name was invoked, I feel a duty to respond with that. And I don't know if you recall at that League of Minnesota Cities meeting in Fergus Falls back so many years ago, we had another guest at our table, or maybe the next table, was the mayor of either Brooklyn Park or Brooklyn Center, Jesse Ventura, was at
yes,
that meeting.
Right.
He was at that meeting. So, no, I thank you so much, Chair Marquardt, and I'm certainly looking forward to serving on the Committee of Committees. Are there any others? I don't know, but the Tax Committee, I consider the Committee of Committees. I've got a lot of respect for the chairman, and of all the people in the world, there's only one I can think of that would be a better chair. But since he can't do it, we have a very, very strong chair that does work just for new members, that does work in a bipartisan manner, is extremely thoughtful and inclusive of members. And so your ideas will be heard, maybe not always agreed to, but they will be heard. And that means a lot. And so, Chair Marquardt, I'm certainly looking forward to the 21-22 session of the Tax Committee. I'm looking forward to a very productive two-year session. Thank you, Chair Marquardt.
Thank you, Chair Davids. And if you would, I can't remember the exact situation of your special election. Why was there a special election, Chair Davids?
Governor Arnie Carlson was elected, and he appointed my legislator, Elton Redolin, to be the Ag Commissioner. So there were five Republicans, two Democrats, and a Socialist that ran for that seat, and I was very, very fortunate to win in a special election. So now I represent District 28B, which is Fillmore in Houston County. So I border Iowa and Wisconsin, so I get a lot of their news and what they're doing there. So I'm way in the southeast corner. So geographically, we're quite a ways apart, but I think in this committee, we can do a lot of things productive and do them together. Thanks, Chair Marquardt.
Thank you. Vice Chair Les Lagarde.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Dave Les Lagarde represents 6P, the majority of the Iron Range, and this is my second term, and it's also my second stint on taxes, and I thoroughly enjoy it. Look forward to working with all of you.
Thank you very much. Now I'm going to call members off alphabetically. So Representative Abaje.
Thank you so much, Chair. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Esther Agbaje. I will be representing House District 59B, which covers downtown Minneapolis and parts of the North Side. Really looking forward to this committee. Thank you. And it's my first term.
Thank you very much, Representative Carlson. And we no longer have to go Carlson A, so Representative Carlson.
I know. I miss Lyndon every day. I hope he's doing well. Well, good afternoon, everybody. Representative Andrew Carlson, District 50B, which is within Bloomington. And I'm in my third term. Happy to be on taxes again and get to work with you all.
Thank you. Representative Detmer.
Good morning, or good afternoon, I should say, everybody. But yes, I'm State Representative Bob Detmer from District 39A. I'm in my eighth term. And I also serve on the Veterans Affairs and Labor Committee. They've combined those two committees. I've chaired the Veterans Committee in the past. And I'd have to say that the Tax Committee was my second choice, but the Veterans was my first choice. So, you know, that's the way I am on that. But it's an honor to serve on this committee. And Chair Marquardt, you're the first person I met from the other side of the aisle when I stepped onto the House floor in 2007. You came up to me right away and introduced yourself. And of course, you know why we hit it off right off the bat was that we're both educators and we're both wrestling coaches and we both wrestle in the college level and so forth. So we've had a great time talking about the sport. And but it's an honor to serve. And I agree with Chair Davids that this is a great committee to serve on. It's a fun committee to serve on from what I've experienced in the past. I've served on it before. So I'm glad I'm back. Thank you so much.
There you go. Thank you, Representative Detmer. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's good to be here, although, you know, being back on the Tax Committee with the rabidly partisan and left-wing Paul Marquardt is a little bit disappointing. But no, I'm kidding you, Mr. Chairman. Congratulations on your appointment once again. I guess my first call to action is going to be to teach Representative Lislegard how to tie a tie. Or maybe to teach Representative Carlson how to get a haircut, huh? Is that what the committee's going to take up? Pat Garofalo, I represent Farmington as well as portions of rural Dakota and Goodhue counties. Honored to be on the Tax Committee. As always, I look forward to listening and learning from not only the testifiers, but also the incredible nonpartisan staff we have. And as the economy continues to improve, hopefully we have some opportunities to help people and have disagreements about how to help people as opposed to a deficit where we have a disagreement on how to hurt people. So look forward to working with you again, Mr. Chairman, and congratulations again.
Thank you very much. Representative Gomez.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Aisha Gomez. I'm the representative from District 62B, which is parts of the south side of Minneapolis. I'm in my second term and have had the absolute honor of serving on the committee of committees for my first term, and I'm happy to be back and really looking forward to this work with you all. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Herr.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you, Chair Marquardt, and I'm really excited to be joining the Tax Committee. I am a second termer, and I was not on this committee my first term, but I'm really excited to be here and joining all of you, and I'm ready to learn and roll up my sleeves and get to work.
Thank you. Representative Hertaus.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and congratulations. Can you hear me?
We can, yes.
Okay, very good. Well, I want to thank you for that very nice introduction that you did. And it came to my thought that as you were talking about the mayors, the numbers of mayors that we have in this committee, including yourself, myself, and Chair Davids, and Representative McDonald, this is the committee that, or taxes, I should say, not tax committee, but even property taxes. You and I have served together on tax-related items for this will be the ninth year consecutively. But I've had the great honor and privilege of getting to know you better And one of the things to illustrate your bipartisanship that I'd like to point out to the members that in my very first term at the legislature while serving on the Property Tax Committee, Chair Marquardt decided at one time during the meeting to hand me the gavel and let me preside over the meeting, even though we were in the minority. So I appreciated that very much as your gesture of bipartisanship. And there must be something about this committee that brings us together or gravitates towards the participation. Chair Abrams, as you mentioned, was my former high school classmate back in St. Louis Park. And also Jesse Ventura, when I lived in Brooklyn Park, I was chair of one of his committees that he had appointed. So I had those things in common. Jerry Hertas, representing 33A, which is the western 35 to 40% of Hennepin County geographically. There are 11 cities out here that I represent. It is really the rural portion of Hennepin County. This is my fifth term, and this is my second term on the full tax committee. And as I mentioned, I've served on property tax consecutively since I've been here. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Representative Howard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mike Howard, serving District 50A, that's Richfield and parts of East Bloomington. This is my second term in the House, but my first tour of duty on the Tax Committee, and I'm just so excited to be part of a committee that has such an important role in setting the values of our state, the values of our state budget, and making such an important difference in people's lives. So glad to be here.
Thank you. Representative McDonald.
Good afternoon, Chair. Good to see you, and congratulations on your chairmanship. Representative Joe McDonald from Wright County. It's actually on my nameplate in the House is Wright Hennepin. I have just a very small portion of Hennepin County in Rockford. It's my sixth term serving now, so I'm getting old. They call me Old McDonald, and that's fine if you call me that as well. Representing Delano and Rockford and Howard Lake and Waverly and Montrose and Annandale and South Haven and some of the townships. My sixth term on taxes. It always is a pleasure to be on taxes. It really is a wonderful committee for those new members. When we do meet, I would presume that it's going to be just as rambunctious and fun and important Zooming as it is in person. Representative Marquardt is the excellent chairman, and really appreciate his friendship and his trust and respect him a lot. And I've worked with Chair David as well as our chair lead. So it's a pleasure to be back on the Tax Committee. I do pray and look forward to the day that we're all together again. And then real quickly for Representative Marquardt and Davids, when Representative Davids was elected in that special election because Elton Rell Dullin became the Ag Commissioner, my father, who was in the legislature for 14 years, had retired and was Commissioner Elton's assistant commissioner at the time, or assistant deputy commissioner, something like that. So a little history for you two young gentlemen. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Miller.
My computer, there we go.
There we go. We can hear you now.
Yeah, I switched screens for a second. I apologize. Thank you, Chair Marquardt. It's a real pleasure to be able to be on this committee with you. I know I'm a late entry. I always notice kind of odd things as we're listening along, and I don't know what the total numbers are, but there's a lot of people with the last name with the letter H and a lot of people with the last letter M. They seem to dominate this committee. No idea what that means, but that's a little factoid for the day. But I represent District 17A, and just like you, it's very rural, so I name counties, not towns or portions of towns. I have Swift County, Chippewa County, all but two townships in Renville County, and then I have four townships in Candy Ohio County. And this is my first year. This is my fourth term in the House, but this is my first term in taxes. I've done a lot of work in property taxes due to the nature of rural Minnesota, but I'm really looking forward to this. This is going to be a learning experience for me. It's going to help me kind of understand and frame out how things work here in Minnesota. I'm on Ways and Means also this year, so I kind of ironically say I'm on the committee that raises the money and I'm on the committee that spends it. So on the front lines of a budget year, and I'm really looking forward to it. So I appreciate you letting me be on your committee, and I look forward to working with everyone on it.
Thank you very much. Chair Moran.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Rena Moran. I represent District 65A in St. Paul. Those are communities like the Midway, which we have our current soccer stadium. Also Frogtown, the historical Rondo community. A little part of the north end by the Capitol is also my district. I am in my sixth term in the House of Representatives, and I look forward to working with you, Chair Marquardt, as the Chair of Ways and Means, as we do the work of the people of Minnesota.
Thank you very much. Representative Mortensen.
Hello, everybody. Representative Mortensen. I am out of District 55A, which is Shakopee, Louisville Township, and Jackson Township. And I just consider myself fortunate to be on this taxes committee and looking forward to the overview for today.
Very good. Thank you. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kristen Robbins, I represent House District 34A, which is half of Maple Grove, all of Rogers, and all of Dayton. Oh, well, most of Dayton. Eric Lucero has 14 houses, I believe. And anyway, I very much look forward to being on this committee. I'm in my second term. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Steve Sandell. I'm in my second term. I represent almost all of Woodbury, about 80%, and about 55,000 constituents. Look forward to this, and it's a real pleasure to serve with so many of you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. My name's Jen Schultz. I represent District 7A, which is East Duluth. I'm in my fourth term, and this is my third term serving on taxes, and I'm looking forward to learning, but also getting the work done so we make the state to make sure the state works for everyone. So thank you for adding me to the committee, Paul Marquardt.
Thank you. Representative Stevenson. I think he had a prior engagement we were notified of. So I'm gonna move to the next, Representative Swazinski.
Hi everyone, Representative Chris Swazinski, represent House A, was elected in Ott 10. I served the counties of Lyon, Redwood, Yellow Medicine, and Lacaparral County in the legislature along the South Dakota border. I farm, have a small welding business, and look forward to serving with everyone on tax committee this year.
Thank you much. And the chairperson of the property tax division, Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. I'm Cheryl Joaquin. I represent 46B, which is all of Hopkins and half of St. Louis Park. I'm in my fourth term, and I'm very excited to see new and returning faces here and hope we can have a lot of great discussions and learn from each other. I'd have a little request if Chair Marquardt would indulge me, if possible, if members could turn on their cameras when they speak. It's kind of nice to see faces. And for example, Representative Groffel, I want to see if you grew back your beard. So. Thank you.
There you go. Thank you, members. And I don't know if I officially introduced myself, but I represent District 4B. This is my 11th term. And District 4B includes all or parts of Clay, Becker, and Norman counties. So next, we are going to introduce the staff. We are blessed here at the House to have wonderful staffs, both nonpartisan and partisan. And so I know veteran members of this committee, we lean on that staff. If you've got ideas, they can really help you get those ideas in really good form and can even improve. It's hard to believe they could improve on any of our ideas, but they actually has happened from time to time. So please, utilize the staff. One thing to recognize this year is that it is going to be a little different, and even with the reviser of statutes, just not actually being here or being in the state office building makes things a little slower than normal. So just kind of keep that in mind as I say that you certainly use the staff, but make sure that you kind of keep that in mind too. So With that, I would like I will start out with the nonpartisan research staff, and I will call on your name. And if you would mention, you know, introduce yourself, but say what areas that you work in as far as tax policy. So, Ms. Hagler.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Alex Hagler. I'm with nonpartisan House research staff. This year, I've stepped into the very large shoes that Pat Dalton left when she retired over the summer, and I will be handling sales tax, both state and local, and also the smaller state taxes, well, not smaller, but cigarette, tobacco, alcohol, gambling, mortgage deed, and I know there's one other that I'm forgetting, but I'm sure it'll come up when we do our overview.
Very good. Thank you. So, Ms. Hagler, you'll be working with sales taxes and local option sales tax?
Yes, I will be doing that this year.
Very good. Thank you. Mr. Clayman.
Hi, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Chris Clayman, also with the House Research Department. And I staff the areas of business taxation in general, and specifically also the corporate franchise tax. And I also handle the estate tax. On the local tax side, I handle a few of the smaller local tax issues having to do with things like special assessments and special service districts.
Thank you very much. Mr. Swanson.
Mr. Chair and members, Jared Swanson with House Research. I primarily staff property taxes, but also handle some of the state aids like local government aid, county program aid, and town aid as well.
Thank you. Mr. Williams.
Chair Markwart and members, my name is Sean Williams. I work primarily on the individual income tax, as well as income tax modeling. So we have the capacity in our department to do some basic modeling of tax proposals in the individual income tax.
Thank you very much. Now the nonpartisan fiscal staff, Ms. Schill.
Good afternoon, members, Mr. Chair. My name is Kathy Schill, and I'm a fiscal analyst in the House Fiscal Analysis Department. I basically work with property refunds, tax aids, tax credits, and any other kinds of appropriations that are associated with the tax committee. And I'll be working very closely in the division with Chair Joachim.
Very good. Ms. Templin.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm Cynthia Templin, nonpartisan House fiscal staff. This will be my 17th session with taxes. I cover the taxes that will be discussed in the presentation today, individual income tax, sales tax, corporate tax, liquor taxes, cigarette taxes, MnCare, and lawful gambling taxes. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to move now to partisan research staff, Mr. Rubis.
Hi, I'm Stephen Rubis, GOP Research. This is my 11th year on tax committee, and looking forward to another session.
Thank you. Ms. Martin.
I'm Margaret Martin, and I am the partisan researcher for the New House Republican Caucus, and I will be staffing Representative Miller and Representative Mortensen.
Thank you so much. And Ms. Martin, I have noted the correction in the pronunciation, so thank you. Mr. Hedorn.
Hello, I'm Sean Hedorn. I'm DFL research on taxes, and this is my third term, and I'm excited to be back. All right, thanks.
Thank you much. Mr. Jessen.
Hi, I'm Nathan Jessen. I'm committee administrator, and this is my third year as CA for this committee.
Thank you very much. And Ms. Griska.
I'm Ursula Griska. I'm the committee legislative assistant, and this is my third year on the tax committee.
Very good. So, well, thank you all to this wonderful staff that we have, and look forward to working with all of you this year. The next area is the rules, and as Representative Davids will tell you, in the past there's not a lot of rules in Taxes Committee, but I just kind of want to call your attention to a few. You do have these committee procedures and rules, and they will be put onto the committee website. Also, when we're dealing with referrals of bills to the division, to the Property Tax Division, we're going to do that by method of a referral memo. So you should probably have one of those already. So we'll be doing that. But again, these procedures and rules will be on the website. And so if you cannot make a meeting, you are excused. You're excused. If you can, it would be good if you could notify staff of that, Ms. Griska or Mr. Jessen, on that. But we're all legislators here, and if you're missing, you are excused. On roll calls, this is ranking number four on the rules. So most votes, unless there's a roll call given, we're just going to do a voice vote. But if there's a roll call asked, then we will do it kind of the same way in which we were doing it on the House floor. So you would say your name, like Marquardt, aye. And then we will have the committee legislative assistant repeat your vote. Would say Marquardt, aye. She would repeat that, so we make sure we have that correct. There's not a lot for amendments until we start really getting to putting together the omnibus bill and marking that up. But there is no 24-hour rule. The only thing I would ask is, again, to keep staff's time in mind when you're doing that. And if they get hit with 50 amendments the last day, that's going to be kind of tough. And one thing to remind members is that if you have testifiers that are from out of town, make sure that we are aware of this so that even if for some reason we wouldn't get to your bill that day, we would allow that person to testify since they traveled. So just give us the heads up on something like that. We don't want to miss somebody who's come from, well, we don't want to miss any testifiers no matter what, but especially if someone can't make it like the next day, it's inconvenient. We just especially want to know that. So I think we're ready to move to overviews. And, you know, as you listen to the overviews this year, right now, I mean, this year as we kind of look, we know we have some things we're going to be looking at as challenges. You know, the fact of the COVID-19 and the impact on individuals and businesses, and knowing that COVID-19 is not impacting people equally. And so kind of think about that. Also the fact that into the next biennium, we're looking at a structural deficit of $1.6 billion with a, you know, that's not including another $1.3 billion of surplus or of inflation. So, I mean, add that up, it's about $2.9 billion of deficit. And then also one thing that I'm hoping this tax committee can do this year is also look at ways to increase accountability and transparency for taxpayers. You know, looking at, you know, every taxpayer should know, you know, where their dollars are going, but also what type of value they're getting for that dollar. So as you kind of listen to these overviews, think of things to, you know, there's going to be a lot of issues, but I think those might be three of the ones that we're going to probably deal with quite a bit this year. So with that, we're going to start with Ms. Templin is going to give an overview. And then what I would ask members is that we're going to kind of take these by segments. And when the presenter is done with that segment, I'll open it up at that point for questions. And I don't know if we're going to get through this all today. If not, we'll come back on another day. Our next meeting is going to be next Tuesday. And the Department of Revenue will be in to kind of talk about what they're doing and kind of how they certainly fit into the tax. So with that, Ms. Templin, if you would begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Right now, you should have the presentation on your screen. We are sharing screens. And the next 62 slides will be discussing a briefing on Minnesota state taxes. Next slide, please.
I hate to interrupt at this point, but you're talking briefly and you just mentioned 62 slides. I don't want to lose members here right off the bat. But very good. Please continue.
Okay. Thank you for being here today. Yes, we will be covering briefly the Minnesota state taxes and on a warm, rare January day. If we don't get to your questions today, please feel free to reach out. We're available if you need any additional follow-up. Again, our job today is to cover state taxes, and we've kind of grouped these taxes into five areas. My colleagues and I will be discussing these five sections. Mr. Williams and House Research will be discussing individual income taxes. Ms. Hagler in House Research will be discussing sales. And Mr. Clayman and Ms. Hagler will also be discussing corporate taxes, excise taxes, and other taxes. So we have a pretty big agenda. So we will go as fast as we can without being going too fast. Next slide, please. We're on slide three. This slide shows state tax revenues for all funds. This is general fund and non-general fund. And it shows $26.7
billion. That's not the slide we have. We have income and sales are by far the largest state taxes. So I don't think we're on the same
slide. Sorry. Let me start over. So this slide shows total taxes of $26.7 billion for fiscal 19. And individual income tax and sales tax constitute 73% of total state taxes. Is everyone on that slide? Is that making more sense?
Okay. This is tax revenues by tax type. Is that the one we're on?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes. Right. Okay. So $26.7 billion is collected for fiscal 19, and income tax and sales tax constitute about 73% of total state tax revenues. In previous legislative sessions, a majority of the tax bills that come to committee relate to income taxes and sales taxes, but the tax committee hears tax proposals for a lot of other taxes. Next slide, please. Slide four shows state tax revenues, and it's the same information as the previous slide, except it shows, instead of percentages, it shows the dollar amounts that were collected in fiscal 19 for each tax type. As you can see, the sum of income taxes and sales taxes equals $18.7 billion out of $26.7 billion. Within the total are constitutionally dedicated tax receipts, such as motor fuels at $938 million and motor vehicle taxes at $810 million. Next slide, please. On slide five, I want to talk briefly about kind of the fiscal resources that you have at your fingertips and what you'll be seeing this session. We'll start with revenue estimates. During the session, when bills are heard, one resource that you will see throughout the session are revenue estimates. All bills heard in tax committee will receive a revenue estimate. Revenue estimates are analysis of the estimated changes in revenues based on the most recent economic forecast or a tax proposal. These estimates are not completed by the House Fiscal Analysis Department, but they're completed by the Tax Research Division in the Minnesota Department of Revenue. In almost all cases, these estimates are reviewed before each session or before each hearing by nonpartisan fiscal staff, such as myself and my colleague, Kathy Schill, who you'll be introduced later. We review the estimates in advance of the hearing to make sure that the estimate matches the intent of the bill. Just as an aside, revenue estimates can also be prepared for confidential tax bills, and revenue analyses can be kept confidential until a tax proposal gets introduced. The next tool that we infrequently work with, but it's worth mentioning, are fiscal notes. Fiscal notes, I'm sure you've seen some of the members that are returning and new members. These are estimates of the administrative cost of a program or for operations for agencies. These estimates are also prepared by a nonpartisan office. They're now being prepared by the LBO, but the actual fiscal notes are written up by state agencies. I also just want to point out that revenue estimates and fiscal notes are not the same thing. They are different. And just to keep that in mind, they're delivered by different state agencies. One is the revenue estimates done by the Department of Revenue and the fiscal note by LBO. Also, another tool that we see more so in the Property Tax Committee are local impact notes. And these are also coordinated by the Legislative Budget Office, LBO. These estimates take a lot of time, and they can be requested through the chair and ranking minority member of the Tax and Ways and Means Committee. We often see these toward the end of session. And then finally, I want to also just quickly discuss legislative tracking sheets. The Tax Committee in the House is unique because the tracking sheets, there are like two tracking sheets, one for tax revenues and one for property tax expenditures. Tracking sheets they compare executive and legislative budget proposals throughout the budget year, and they provide a good historical document of budget decisions. We usually work more with tracking sheets at the end of sessions, and all tracking sheets can be found on the House Fiscal Analysis website. Next slide. Now we're turning to income tax. I will cover the next four slides. And before I turn to Mr. Williams to go over the nuts and bolts of income tax, I will start each section with a quick overview of how much is collected from income tax, and we'll touch on the incidence of income tax. As you know, individual income tax is collected through withholding, estimated payments, and final returns. Returns for the tax year filed are adjusting my screen. Returns for the tax year filed following the close of the tax year. For income taxes filed in 20 for tax year 19. The traditional due date is April 15, 2020, but last year the due date was extended because of the pandemic. This was something that the commissioner did through her authority and extended it to July 15, 2020. Next slide. Income tax revenues, $12.4 billion was collected in fiscal 2019 from income tax revenues, and this represents about 47% of state tax revenues in fiscal 19. all of the revenue goes to the general fund. Next slide. This slide shows historical income tax collections for 10 years in nominal dollars and inflation adjusted dollars. As you can see in fiscal 2012, just about $7 billion was collected in nominal dollars, and over $12.4 billion is projected to be collected in fiscal 21. Within this 10-year period, income tax law has changed significantly since 2012, with tax rate structure changes and conformity to federal laws. Mr. Williams will talk about this further when we kind of take a deep dive into income tax. But before we do that, I want to cover two slides. These two slides relate to tax incidents. The concept of tax incidents will be discussed for all the tax types in this presentation, or most of them. Just as a quick preface to these two slides, the data for these slides comes from the tax incidents study that is prepared by the Department of Revenue, and it is published every 2 years. And in fact, in just 3 months, we'll get another updated study. A couple of quick terms that are used in this study, the term tax incidents. This is the incidence of a tax, and it's the final resting place of tax burden. And then also in these slides, tax incidence data uses population data grouped by deciles for analytical purposes. As you can see, the first decile of income is at $19,759 and under, and the fifth decile income starts at $106,852 and over. So you can see the first quintile shows households with the lowest 20% of income, and the fifth quintile shows households with the highest 20% of household income. So slide 9 before you, when we talk about burden, one measure used by economists is to look at the effective tax rate. Effective tax rates are the ratio of taxes paid to income. Specifically, this graph on page 10 shows the effective tax rates for individual income taxes across quintiles. The tax incidence study often would describe this graph as the distribution of tax burden by income level. The Minnesota individual income tax has a graduated tax structure. The income tax is by design a progressive tax. It is a progressive tax because the effective tax rate increases as income increases. As you can see, the effective tax rate steadily increases from the first quintile at negative 0.9% all the way up to 5.9% at the fifth quintile. Next slide, please. This second slide shows the percentage of total tax collected for each quintile. For income tax, the fifth quintile, which is the quintile with the highest income, bore 74.7% of the total income tax burden. The other four quintiles bore about 25% of the total tax paid. I guess to sum it up, the tax committee hears a lot of bills that affect tax incidents and the distribution of tax across income level. Previous legislative sessions, for example, the tax committee has heard bills that change tax rates or add a tier to the rate structure. We also hear bills that change tax expenditures, which are credits and exemptions. All of these changes affect the incidence of taxes. Now, I will turn to my colleague, Mr. Williams, to take a deep dive into the state income tax system. Thank you.
Well, members, we'll go to Mr. Williams, and after we're done with the income tax portion, then I'll open it up for questions. So, Mr. Williams.
Chair Markwart and members, for the record, my name is Sean Williams. I'm with the Nonpartisan House Research Department. I wanted to just briefly talk about what our department does and what role we'll be playing in the task committee this year, every year. We are nonpartisan staff, so we work with members from both parties on a confidential basis. We work closely with the fiscal analysts. We provide both House members and the committee itself with legal and policy analysis, as well as legislative research. We draft bills and amendments. We prepare summaries of the bills before the committee. We have sort of a unique role in the tax area in that we model income tax, property tax, and state aid proposals. So we can sort of show how different proposals have effects on people from different income levels, effects of proposals on different property types, and effects of proposals on different units of local government. Our office also prepares publications on policy topics that are of legislative interest. So we have a lot of publications on taxes that are available on our website. Next slide, please. At a high level, the individual income tax is a tax on income. It's paid both by individuals, but also it's a tax imposed on businesses. So certain kinds of businesses, so-called pass-through businesses, pay the individual income tax. Those taxes aren't paid directly by the business. The income earned by that business is instead passed through to the individual members, partners, shareholders, or owners of the business entity. So some examples of pass-through entities include sole proprietorships, partnerships, S-corporations, and some LLCs. C-corporations instead pay the corporate franchise tax and they don't pay the individual income tax. Next slide, please. At the highest level, the calculation of the individual income tax is the tax base times the applicable tax rate. That gets you a preliminary tax. You take the preliminary tax and subtract off any credits that you might be eligible for, and that gets you the final tax. Next slide, please. So sort of the highest level policy choices that you as members face are: what tax base should we use for the individual income tax? What rates do we want to apply? And what credits do we want to allow? Next slide. Our current tax base is Minnesota taxable income. So the way that that's calculated for the individual income tax is you take federal adjusted gross income, which you sometimes hear called just adjusted gross income. That's sort of a federal measure of income that's pretty broad. We add certain additions for Minnesota income. We allow a subtraction for dependents. Then we allow taxpayers to claim either the standard deduction or itemized deduction. And then there are certain other subtractions that every single taxpayer gets regardless of whether they itemize deductions. So when you sort of add and subtract those different items, that gets you Minnesota taxable income, which is the base for our tax. Next slide, please. This slide shows sort of the relationship between our tax and the state and the federal tax in the more visual form. So the blue boxes and arrows show federal components of the system, and the green boxes show state components of the system. You can see that the federal system starts with gross income. That's sort of all different kinds of income, so business income, wages, capital gains, everything else. We subtract off adjustments, which are sometimes called above the line deductions. That gets you adjusted gross income. Now you can see there that sort of the taxes diverge. So the federal tax would subtract federal standard and itemized deductions and the qualified business income deduction. But we separate from the federal government at that point, and we calculate Minnesota taxable income. And that's calculated in the way that I described on the previous slide. From there, we'd apply our rates in our brackets. That would get you your tax before your credits. And lastly, you'd subtract your credits, and that would get you your tax after the credits. I guess two things that this slide demonstrates are, first, that elements of federal policy that sort of are on the left side of the slide after we've diverged from the federal tax system don't affect our tax. So things like federal itemized deductions don't directly affect our tax unless we've kind of picked those up for state purposes. Things like federal credits don't affect Minnesota tax directly. One other thing I'd note is that this has changed pretty significantly since the last time I gave this presentation, because the 2019 omnibus tax bill switched our tax. Our tax previously started with federal taxable income, but the 2019 omnibus tax bill moved the starting point back up to adjusted gross income. So we now have our own dependent exemptions, we have our own standard and itemized deductions, and those were things that we previously relied on the federal government for. Next slide, please. So this is an example calculation. This is mostly, I came up with this example to try to sort of illustrate these different steps and sort of the sequence they take. I wouldn't draw any sort of policy implications necessarily from this person, but just this is an example I could come up with of someone that have different elements of the tax at different steps. So This person is a family, or it's a family of three, married, filing jointly. They have $50,000 of wage income. They have some student loan and childcare expenses. So their gross income is $50,000. They own $50,000 in wages. At the federal level, they subtract off their student loan interest. That's an above-the-line deduction or an adjustment to income. That gets you your adjusted gross income, which is $47,500. Then we subtract off Minnesota subtractions. So they're claiming the Minnesota K-12 expenses subtraction. That's $1,625. They're claiming the Minnesota standard deduction, so they're not itemizing for Minnesota purposes. That's another $24,800. They're claiming the Minnesota dependent exemption, which is $4,300 in tax year 2020. So that gets them a Minnesota taxable income of $16,775. That income all happens to fall in the first bracket, so they pay the 5.35% rate on all of that income. It gets them $897 in Minnesota tax before credits. Then they're taking the student loan credit in this example, so that would subtract off $500 from their liability. That gets them a tax of $397 before refundable credits. And then they're separately taking the dependent care credits, so maybe they had some child care expenses that qualified for that. Now that's a refundable credit, which means that even though the credit is more valuable than their total tax liability, so they have $397 prior to the dependent care credit, and the dependent care credit is $600. So they actually qualify for a refund of $203. Next slide, please. So what I've hopefully demonstrated with these previous slides is that our system is built sort of on top of the federal system. That means federal laws and rules that apply to calculating federal adjusted gross income also affect the state tax. Most rules that affect calculation of business income affect FAGI, and that's sort of an important fact for things like depreciation, business losses, and those sorts of things. So changes to those rules federally affect Minnesota. However, we don't automatically adopt those federal changes. We're what's called a static date conformity state. So what that means is we set a date in statute and say we've adopted all of the federal changes to federal law through that date. So we're currently conformed through December 31st, 2018. Other states are what are called rolling conformity states. So when the federal government changes the federal tax law, that would automatically be incorporated into their law. But we have a Supreme Court decision. It's the Wallace decision from 1971, which says that we are have to be a static conformity state. The legislature has to proactively act to adopt those changes. So as of right now, we're conformed through the end of 2018. Next slide, please. So another choice you face is, and this sort of relates mostly to the tax base, but what federal changes do you want to conform to? So there are currently four acts that we're out of conformity with. There's provisions in here that what are kind of called informally extenders. These are federal tax provisions that get adopted and extended one or two or three or four years at a time, but they are scheduled to expire federally. So each time the federal government chooses to extend those, we have to choose whether or not we continue to conform to them. So some of those were contained in the Further Consolidated Appropriations Act from 2019 and also the Consolidated Appropriations Act from last month. And there's two federal laws that were sort of coronavirus response laws from 2020 that had pretty significant tax components to them. Next slide, please. So other choices that you have are sort of what additions to require. This is sort of in the determination of the tax base. So some additions are required by federal law. What itemized deductions to allow. So we now get to make policy choices about which of those we want to allow for the state purpose. What subtractions to allow. Again, some of those are required by federal law. And also how do you adjust for family size in the tax code? So we currently allow a dependent exemption. I'm gonna quickly walk through some of the choices that we've already made. It's worth noting that, again, some of these are gonna be because we're not in conformity with federal law. Some of these are gonna be sort of required for constitutional reasons or reasons of federal law. And some of them are just choices that the legislature has made to provide tax benefits to certain groups of people. So the first item is additions. So these are things that people are required to add back on their Minnesota taxes. One example is interest on other states' bonds. Another example is federal changes that we haven't conformed to that are sort of subtractions federally. We might have to add those back at the state level. Next slide. There's some subtractions that are also required by federal law, things like U.S. bond interest, railroad retirement benefits, and on-reservation earnings of members of Indian tribes. There's also certain subtractions that we have that are sort of based on timing issues. So these are things that are recognized earlier under federal law, but later under state tax law. So things like bonus depreciation, certain net operating loss rules, and those are subtractions that we allow because we're sort of not following the exact federal laws on those issues. The last group of subtractions I'm going to describe are these, what I'm calling state discretionary items. So these are policy choices the legislature has made to sort of allow these kinds of tax preferences. So we allow a subtraction for non-itemized or charitable contributions, a portion of Social Security benefits. I'm not going to go through the whole list, but you can see here some of the bigger ones that have been allowed for sort of discretionary regions. Next slide is itemized deductions. So taxpayers for Minnesota purposes can either choose to claim the standard deduction. It's $24,800 in tax year 2020 for married couples filing a joint return, or they can itemize the deduction and claim sort of the total amount of these items that I have listed here. These largely mirror the post 2017 federal deductions that were allowed under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017. We sort of mirror the post TCJA structure federally, but we actually kept two deductions for Minnesota purposes that were suspended federally, the unreimbursed employee expense deduction and the casualty and theft loss deduction. Next slide, please. Our tax rates, you can see them here. It's 5.35%, 6.8%, 7.85%, and 9.85%. The brackets here are for married couples filing joint returns. So you can sort of see how the rates increase as you go up the income spectrum. Next slide. Last item I'm going to talk about quickly is Minnesota's tax credits. So these are, in almost every case, a state discretionary item. There's one exception I'll talk about, but we allow 11 non-refundable credits and 9 refundable credits. And just to briefly describe the distinction, refundable credits can reduce your tax liability down to $0, but if you've got $1,000 credit and a $500 tax liability, you can only go down to zero, even though the credit's larger. Refundable credits offset liability, and if your credit is bigger than your liability, then the excess is refunded to you. So next slide is a list of our non-refundable credits. I'm not going to go through it in any on item by item, but I just would mention that the credit for taxes paid to another state is the biggest of these, but it's actually not an item of discretion. It's required that we have one of these by a recent Supreme Court case. It's sort of designed to avoid double taxation for taxpayers who file returns in multiple states. But this is a list of our non-refundable credits. And the last slide is a list of our refundable credits. All of these are sort of items of state discretion. The largest of these is the working family credit. It's the state version of the earned income credit. And the second largest is the historic structure credit, which, as the slide notes, actually sunsets in the middle of the year this year when the fiscal year ends. So that's the end of the income portion of this presentation. So Ms. Templin and I are happy to take questions from members if they have any.
Very good. And I see Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If Ms. Templin is available for a question right now.
Ms. Templin.
Yes.
Thank you. And so, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Templin, early on in your presentation, you showed the progressive nature of the income tax broken out by decile. Two questions. One is that when taxes are considered paid to non-state sources, so for example, when somebody pays a property tax or they pay a fee at the local level, I assume that that's not included in that data because it just is income tax data. Is that correct?
Ms. Templin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, Cynthia Templin, for the income tax slide, yes, the for the effective tax rate, that shows only taxes paid for income taxes only.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman and Ms. Templin, my second
Senator
question.
Garofalo.
Obviously, the state, when we're talking about income taxes, the state income tax is just a small portion of the overall income taxes people pay. In addition to that, there's payroll, substantial payroll taxes to the federal government. In addition, there's much higher tax rates for high income earners. Is it safe to say that those numbers are also not included in that slide, the taxes that are being paid?
Ms. Templin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, correct. The slide that you see is for income taxes is only state income tax. There are no federal income taxes included. If for some reason I get different information about that, I will follow up.
Thank you. And then, Mr. Chairman, my final question.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. Ms. Templin, so I'm sure you're familiar that a couple of years ago, the deduction for state and local taxes on federal tax returns was capped at $10,000. Previously, Minnesotans were had the opportunity to deduct all their state income taxes if they itemized. There's been talk recently, now with the change in the elections at the federal level, that that cap would be removed, so that those who have taxes in excess, who pay more than $10,000 in taxes, would be able to fully itemize all those taxes. That tax preference, is there any state interaction with that? I know that when the state is, you know, we're talking about state taxes that are paid being deducted at the federal level, would that result in any changes to revenue on the local side of in our local tax code, our state tax code?
Ms. Templin.
Mr. Chair, I would have to get back to you on that question. I don't have specific information about that, and I want to make sure I answer the question correctly. So I would need to get back to you about that, unless Mr. Williams has additional information about that.
Mr. Williams, anything to add?
Chair Mark Ward and Representative Garofalo, there's no revenue effect to the federal SALT cap. We have our own state limitation on the property tax deduction, because you can't deduct your state taxes on your state taxes. And that's written into state law and sort of independent of the federal SALT limitation. SALT is an abbreviation for state and local tax deduction. The other thing I would say is that the one interaction is that when the federal deduction for taxes paid is capped, then sort of the amount of tax paid by a taxpayer would go up if their state taxes, or if, I guess it makes Minnesota taxpayers more sensitive to changes in their state taxes because they can't deduct them federally.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, and thank you to the nonpartisan staff for that.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also have a question for Ms. Templin.
Go ahead, Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Ms. Templin, I taught public finance last semester at UMD, and the biggest aha moment for my students was the what I tried to reveal to them was our tax rate system, and I'm explaining marginal tax rates and why an effective tax rate is so important to use, because they had assumed that people's highest income tax rate was a tax rate for all of their income, and they were really surprised to learn that they're only paying that, you know, higher tax rate on a portion of their income. So can you just quickly elaborate why it's important to look at the effective tax rate and explain what a marginal tax rate is for those observing our committee today?
Ms. Templin.
Sure, Mr. Chair and Representative, yes. The effective tax rate is the ratio of taxes paid to income, and that is data from the tax incidence study. And you can see from the slides that the effective tax rate can be computed for each of the quintiles. And for income tax, the effective tax rate does go up. That is different from the marginal tax rate, and Mr. Williams had a slide that showed the rates for the Minnesota state income tax system and the rates that are paid as you earn income for each additional dollar. The rates increase at different points of income. Mr. Williams probably can articulate that better, but that that is distinct and different from the effective tax rates.
Mr. Williams, if you want to elaborate on that, but also one other thing if you might want to talk about is the indexing of those marginal rates and those. Mr. Williams.
Chair Mark Gordon, members, so I think as Ms. Templin and Representative Schultz were alluding to, your marginal tax rates are paid only on increments of income that are in that bracket. So if you earn, for example, $300,000 and you're a married couple filing a joint return, you would only pay that 9.85% rate on income above $273,000, which is where the fourth tier kicks in. And as I think Representative Marquardt was alluding to, our brackets are indexed for inflation every year. So the bracket amounts increase every year. I hope that's what you were asking about.
So, right. Thank you, Mr. Williams. Representative Schultz?
That's it. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Ms. Templin and Mr. Williams.
Very good. You know, I'm looking at my screen. I don't see any more hands up, but anyone else want to ask a question at this time? Okay. We will move to the next area, and I think Ms. Templin, you're going to start out the sales tax intro.
Yes, we should be, Mr. Chair, we should be, this is Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff, we should be on slide 30. This is the second of five tax areas that we'll be discussing. As you can see, sales tax in fiscal 19, $7.1 billion in actual collections was deposited to the state system. $809 million was collected from motor vehicle sales tax. And sales tax represents about 27% of total state collected taxes. And businesses, according to the tax incidence study, pay about 46% of the tax. Next slide, please. Thank you. Historical sales tax collections. This slide shows the 10-year history of sales tax collections based on the most recent forecast. You can see in nominal dollars in fiscal 2012, about just over $4.5 billion was collected. And in projected in 21, $7 billion is projected to be collected from sales tax. Next slide, please. The next two slides have to do with effective tax rates and who pays. These are tax incidence slides. And again, this data comes from the tax incidence study that's going to be updated in 3 months. For sales tax, the effective tax rate, again, it is the ratio of sales taxes to income, or taxes paid on relative to income. This slide shows the distribution of tax burden by income for sales taxes. On net, the effective tax rate declines as income increases. This pattern in the chart that you see is what an economist, again, would describe as a regressive tax, since the effective tax rate falls as income tax increases. So you can see for the first quintile, which starts at $19,759, the effective tax rate is about 7% compared to the fifth quintile, which has an effective tax rate of 1.6%. This slide for sales tax is slightly unique too, in that it shows the sum of consumer purchases and business purchases. Next slide, please. And then finally, for sales taxes, for the tax incidence slides, we just also want to cover who pays. And this slide is, again, similar to income taxes in that the fifth quintile for pays the largest percent of the total sales taxes at 42.8%. When we looked at income taxes, just briefly to compare, the fifth quintile paid about 74% of the tax for that tax type. Again, we discussed tax incidence in this presentation just to kind of highlight that bigger proposals that you'll see during session in tax committee, like rate changes or changes to the base with tax expenditures, with changes to credits and exemptions, they all affect the incidence of tax.
However, sometimes smaller proposals like a tax exemption on construction materials for a capital expenditure has less of an effect on tax incidents. That concludes the tax incidence portion of sales taxes. And now I will turn to Ms. Hagler to go over sales taxes in more detail. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hagler.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members again. For the record, my name is Alex Hagler. I will be covering the rest of the sales tax portion of the presentation. So first, I'll talk about the sales tax rate. The sales tax rate is actually a combined rate of 6.875% with 6.5% as the base sales tax rate and 0.375% as the rate imposed under the legacy amendment that went in, was enacted in 2009 to the state constitution. Also, the state constitution does dictate how the revenue attributable to that 0.375% is divided, and that's between different legacy funds. And in fiscal 19, there was about $333.5 million raised just under that rate. Once we get into hearing bills for the sales tax bills, you'll see that revenue estimates that Ms. Templin described earlier will show that the bill will have an effect on both the general fund, which is where the 6.5% portion of the tax goes into, and then it'll also have the effect of the legacy fund as well. And when you go to the store, you may notice that when you get a receipt for items that you've purchased, the tax rate is listed as higher than the 6.875%, and that is because many counties and municipalities impose local sales taxes, which then stack on top of the state tax rate. So it looks higher than that 6.875%. And I'll be talking about those a little bit later on, but typically those bills are heard in the property tax and local division and won't come to the full tax committee until the omnibus bill is heard. Next slide. So the sales tax base the sales tax is applied on gross receipts from retail sales of tangible personal property that are made in the state or to a destination within the state, unless an exemption specifically applies. Typically, services aren't subject to sales tax unless they're specifically included by statute. And some of the most common ones are shown here: lodging, cleaning services, digital downloads, and telecommunications. Next slide. These are some of the major exemptions to sales tax, and the most common ones are listed here. For individuals, the biggest exemption are exemptions for food, clothing, and prescription drugs. Cigarettes are also exempt from the state sales tax, but there is an in-lieu sales tax, which we'll also be discussing later in the presentation. Businesses are able to get an exemption for their capital equipment and some farm machinery, and then sales to federal and local governments are also exempt, as well as sales to many charitable organizations. So these are found in statute, and as I said, sales tax will apply to sale of goods unless the statute specifically exempts them. Next slide. For those of you who have been on the tax committee before, you've likely heard some discussion about Wayfair and the streamlined sales tax agreement. But for those of you who are new, in 2018, the U.S. Supreme Court held that states may require remote sellers to collect sales tax if certain conditions are met, even if those retailers and sellers don't have a physical presence within the state. Those conditions vary across the country, but in Minnesota, our statute says that those conditions are 200 or more retail sales into the state within 12 months, or if your sales total in excess of $100,000 within a 12-month period. Minnesota has been collecting sales tax from remote sellers since at least October 2018, so it has been a few years now that this has really gone into effect. And Minnesota is a member of the is a member state of the Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement, which is a which has simplified and made uniform the way sales taxes are collected and administered for retailers and other member states. And there's a lot of information on the agreement and also Wayfair in the state taxes handout that was emailed to members earlier on this week. And those can be found on pages 35 to 38. Next slide. Some special sales taxes. There are a few sales taxes that have different rates than the 6.875%. For example, short-term car rentals are subject to a tax of 21.075%, and that includes the state general sales tax, a 9.2% tax on short-term leases, and then a 5% fee that those agencies are able to charge to reimburse themselves for their registration taxes. And then motor vehicle sales tax is usually the purview of the Transportation Committee, but there is a 6.5% sales tax imposed on those sales, and those revenues are constitutionally dedicated to some transportation funds. As previously mentioned, the majority of sales tax is deposited into the state general fund. However, some sales taxes have special revenue dedication. For example, the motor vehicle sales tax goes into the highway user distribution fund, as well as a public transit fund. The tax on motor vehicle leases is statutorily dedicated to also the highway user fund and certain other transportation funds. The sales tax on auto parts is dedicated to the highway user trump fund, and the majority of the in lieu tax on lottery tickets are deposited into various natural resource funds. And then local sales taxes, there are a few different kinds that are imposed at the local level. Probably the most common are the local option sales taxes that are general sales taxes that would apply to any transaction in the state that the regular state sales tax would apply to. So the revenue for those taxes are used to fund certain projects within the municipality imposing them. And the municipality has to come to the legislature for approval before they can impose the tax. And similarly, they must also submit the tax for voter approval during a referendum. The county transportation taxes, just over half of Minnesota counties impose this tax. This is also a general sales tax that would apply to anything the state sales tax applies to, but this revenue must be used for county transportation projects, and counties are not required to come to the legislature for approval to impose those. And then lastly, there are some taxes that are imposed in certain circumstances or transactions. For example, local lodging taxes are only imposed on lodging, and food and beverage taxes are imposed on restaurant and bar transactions. And these taxes are less common, but do exist across the state. And then, Mr. Chair, that concludes the sales tax portion. So I will be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Hagler. Perfect timing. We will adjourn at 2:30, and I see three members' questions. So, Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Chair and Mr. Hagler, Madam Hagler. Slide 36, it showed the percentage of taxes that are paid by individuals and I think businesses, but it didn't show taxes paid by cities. Now, cities frequently ask for an exemption from sales tax on construction projects. How does that impact the amount of taxes that we collect, and what percentage of sales taxes are collected from cities?
Ms. Hagler.
Mr. Chair and Representative Sandell, I think Ms. Templin might have that information.
Ms. Templin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Sandell, Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff, is the question how much is collected from cities in local sales taxes as a whole, or specifically, I'm not sure I understand the question. If you could repeat it, I appreciate it.
I'm sorry. Not
Representative Sandell.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Templin. I represent Woodbury. Woodbury is proposing some construction and bonding suggestions, and they would like to have be exempt from sales tax. And I'm my concern is lots of cities ask for that, and if they do, what would that what kind of effect would that have on the sales taxes that we collect?
Mr. Chair, Representative Sandell, thank you for restating the question. Yes, the tax committee does hear a lot of proposals from cities or other local entities that would exempt from sales taxes construction materials for certain projects, you know, for a capital expenditure by a city or improvements by a city. And how that in previous years, we've seen proposals that the city would pay the tax up front on the project for construction materials and then be refunded at a later date after receipts are furnished and submitted to the Department of Revenue. The city would get a refund for that, for the project from sales taxes. That is one approach. There's also, cities can also seek an upfront exemption on sales taxes for construction materials for a project as well.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Templin. That's really an interesting issue, and I'd like to talk more about that later. Thank you.
So, thank you, Representative Sandell. We've had bills that would just kind of exempt, rather than having each city come in, it would just totally exempt that. And that, you know, maybe $30 to $60 million, something like that, could be roughly what some of those estimates would be. Representative Herr.
Chair Marquardt, my question is for Ms. Hagler. I just had a quick question about the tax on the manufactured housing. I guess I just want to understand, is that on any kind of like prefab type housing that is like produced, or is it just for like mobile home type? I'm just curious because I think this is incredibly like punishing to people already at lower incomes trying to find affordable housing. I'm just trying to understand how that tax came to be, or you know why we do that on those types of homes, but not maybe on like other types of home purchases.
Ms. Hagler.
Oh, sorry, Mr. Chair, well, lost the unmute button for a second. Mr. Chair and Representative Herr, I'll have to look into that a little bit more because I can't recall if that refers to the products that make up the manufactured homes, or if it's actually a prefab home, or if it's a manufactured home. So I'll look into that and then just get back to you if that's okay.
Thank you. That's great.
Thank you. And final question that I have, Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think my question is for Ms. Templin, might be for Ms. Hagler. I noted in the materials that the state had an estimate from 2011 that we were losing $150 to $200 million in sales tax revenue due to e-commerce. I was interested if the state has, now that we're a couple years after Wayfair, if we have an estimate for how much revenue we've collected either in 2019 or 2020 under the Wayfair rule.
Ms. Templin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Stevenson, Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff. Yes, I believe a couple forecasts ago, the MMB, the Minnesota Management and Budget Economic Analysis, they did provide an estimate of how much was beginning to be collected due to Wayfair. And I believe it was in the range of about $200 million for the first full fiscal state tax year. But I would go back to my notes and I can give you the exact estimate from MMB and send that to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I don't see any more hands up. Thank you so much. We will come back next week and cover the rest of this overview next Tuesday to the Department of, that's our next meeting, is next Tuesday to the Department of Revenue will be before us. So members, thank you so much. Thank you for being on this committee, and we are adjourned.